Chapter 4. 20 minutes later, I was in Tahlequah, the capital of the Cherokee Nation. I drove past the old red brick building on the square that was once the county courthouse but now was property of the Cherokee Nation. I remembered going inside the courthouse a few times with my dad when I was a child. The mysterious odor that clung to the rooms, the slow-turning ceiling fans, the brass spittoons, all were novel to me, and I felt a child's awe at the intriguing surroundings. A bench at the edge of the lawn facing the sidewalk was a gathering place for the Spit and Whittle Club, a group of old-timers who sat and talked about local and national affairs. They solved many a problem, even if the solutions never reached farther than the courthouse square. Probably a good many governmental dilemmas could have been settled if legislators had the common sense of these men. A new courthouse had been built in 1979, and the old building was turned back into the hands of the Cherokee Nation, as it had been when it was originally built in 1869. I made a mental note to take the time to visit this historic landmark again soon. Special Agent Steve Hopper of the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation rose from his black leather chair in the new courthouse when I stepped into the consultation room. A smile began in his dark brown eyes, eyes that I'm certain never missed a thing in his 20-some years as the agency's lead investigator. I came to rely on this man's knowledge, experience, and understanding of human nature when I was working on a story that spread from Dallas into Oklahoma. He often brought keen insight into a difficult case. Steve came around the desk and shook my hand.
Darcy, what a nice interruption.
Thanks for arranging to see me on such short notice, Steve, I said. I realize you hadn't meant to spend a lot of time in Tahlequah today, and rehashing details of an old case wasn't on your agenda.
No problem, he replied. I'm just closing out an episode that required me to be in the courtroom for about 30 minutes, so I've got some extra time.
He motioned me to the chair across from his desk as he sat down.
So, Darcy, I understand you've left the newspaper. I guess that means you're not here in a professional capacity?
No, I took a leave of absence from the paper after my husband passed away. I just needed some time to think and maybe set new goals. I've always wanted to write a book, and now seems to be a good time to start.
You mentioned Andrea Worth's disappearance when you called. Will that be the subject of your book?
In a way, I had actually planned to include a lot of facts and legends about Ventris County, but Andrea's mother sent my mom a letter the other day asking for our help. This is just between you and me, Steve. There was a lot of publicity about Andrea at the time she disappeared, and I think I can find ample material. I haven't spoken to a publisher, but I'm pretty sure I can find a market.
I'd certainly think so. Has anything new come up?
Not really. He leaned forward, put both elbows on the borrowed desk, and tented his fingers.
I'll be happy to help you in any way I can, but I'm sure you're aware I was never officially involved in the case. Ventris County Sheriff at that time called me and wanted some general information because local law enforcement couldn't uncover a shred of evidence that pointed to a murder, an accidental death, a kidnapping, or even a planned disappearance. He had heard I grew up in Amarillo and was acquainted with Andrea's family. Unfortunately, I wasn't much help.
So you don't actually know Andrea's husband, Gary Worth? He shook his head.
Although I'd heard quite a bit about Gary and his business interests, I've never met the man. Mainly what the sheriff wanted from me was an opinion on whether a woman with Andrea's background would simply get up and walk away, maybe with another man, and not even contact her mother. Of course, my opinion was that she would not, but I really don't have any facts in the case other than what I read in the paper.
Opening my shoulder bag, I found my small notebook. I'm not looking for hard facts here, Steve, not anything that can be proven. I'm here today because I want to draw upon your years of experience in human behavior and your instinct about how people usually respond in difficult situations. More particularly, if you've ever had a gut feeling, a guess, or a theory about what happened to Andrea Worth.
That sounds fair, but first, let me get us some coffee. Black, all right?
I nodded. He stepped out into the hall and returned with two steaming paper cups. Settling back in his chair, he thought for a minute.
Okay, let's begin with what I know is factual, then I'll give you my guess as to what actually came down before she disappeared.
My pen was ready.
Let's begin with Tom Mott.
That brought me up short. Andrea's first husband? You think Tom Mott might have been involved? His words were cautious.
I think there are a number of possibilities, but let's start with April of 2001. That's when Andrea was married to Tom Mott. I understand she had been away working, and then her grandmother died and left her a good-sized inheritance. Andrea came back home to Amarillo and helped her mother in the antique shop her mother owned. Mott had a small ranch just south of Amarillo. He met Andrea shortly after she arrived and immediately made a grandstand play for her. They got married less than 2 months after she returned.
He shook his head.
Then it gets sticky. Shortly after their marriage, the couple enlarged Tom's ranch by buying a bigger adjoining ranch.
With Andrea's money, I presume.
Hopper shrugged. Well, he didn't have a big ranch before they were married. By the way, I got all this information from a detective in Amarillo, Lee Davis. I'll give you his number if you want to call him.
Yes, I surely would want to call him.
Sometime later, Tom and Andrea got into a fuss of some kind right in the middle of a large restaurant parking lot. Mott pushed her against the car and she fell and was taken to the emergency room to have her knee stitched up.
Wow, what a rat.
Yes, but she declined to press charges. Andrea filed for divorce in a couple of weeks and moved back in with her mother. She lived with her mom for over a year, I believe.
I pondered the implications of these startling facts as he continued.
And that's all I know that can be proven.
I put down my pen. So, what's your gut telling you about Andrea? Once again, his reply was cautious.
I think there may be something in the divorce file that would help point us in the right direction, but the judge ordered it closed.
Isn't it unusual for a judge to close a court file in a divorce? And if it happens, it can be opened with a court order, can't it?
It is a little unusual for a divorce file to be closed, but it's sometimes done if there's a lot of property involved or if the order contains information that might be damaging to both parties.
There was a lot here I didn't understand. But isn't Andrea's disappearance sufficient reason to have the file opened?
It might be if there was anything at all that pointed a finger of suspicion at Tom Mott, but there isn't. Mott was at home all that week of her disappearance. He's clean as a whistle.
And bank records, I suppose, are all considered confidential.
Hopper nodded. But that changes when a body is found.
He drummed his fingers on the desk.
So we need to figure out where she is. And that, Darcy, is my gut feeling about what happened to Andrea Mott Worth.
So, Andrea's story began in the Texas panhandle town of Amarillo and ended in Levi, Oklahoma. I was dialing Lee Davis's phone number as I slid into my escape.